Before we start today's episode and the festivities, I did want to take a moment and acknowledge the events in Atlanta and even the events closer to us here in the Bay Area. I'd encourage all of our listeners and viewers to speak up and speak out about hate crimes. Just as we're celebrating St. Patrick's Day today, and I'm not Irish, but here I am in my Cheers Dublin shirt. I think we can all do a lot more to be celebrating our differences rather than using them to hate on others.
Guests and hosts drink on this show, and we ask that if you join us, you be of legal age and you drink responsibly. If you want to know about check size, stage, similar questions, this is the wrong podcast for you. On Drinks with a VC, we're all about digging a little bit deeper and getting to know the person behind the investment decisions.
I'm not curious about making an investment that challenges my moral compass. There's like a fine line. And I think ethics and entrepreneurship is something that's not spoken about enough that really should be. And that's not, if it challenges my moral compass or I don't believe in or I don't agree with, like I won't make that investment or I won't partner with that idea.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Drinks with the VC, Episode 7. My name is Vikram Lakwara, and I am the Managing Director and Co-Founder of Early Stage Fund Green Cow Venture Capital. I am joined by my co-hostess with the mostest, Bree Hansen. She heads up biz dev for Berkeley & Associates. Bree, why don't you do us the honor of introducing our amazing guest?
Great. I had the honor of meeting our amazing guest a couple years back on a sail trip, and I was incredibly impressed by her. She had left SpaceX and had started as a principal at Bessemer. She was making really interesting aerospace investments, and she was also a board observer on one of my favorite apps, Smule. But she really stood out as not only just being intelligent, driven and passionate, but she just seemed like a real woman on the rise, someone that I think is going to be a real role model for women who are going to be in STEM to come. So I would love to introduce to you all Tess Hatch, Bessemer's newest partner. Congratulations, and let's have a toast.
Yes, cheers to that.
Thank you so
Congratulations,
much for that very
Tess.
Kind intro, Brie. That was so sweet. And I'm really honored and humbled by the introduction and the promotion to partner. I'm very grateful to join the Bessemer partnership.
It's fantastic. What are we drinking tonight to celebrate?
I am a wine gal. So we are drinking Pinot Noir, except for you, Vic, who I just
yes.
learned is allergic. I am so sorry. If I had known that, I would not have selected red wine.
It's okay. The good news is that we decided to tape this on St. Patty's Day. So as is a tradition in my world, I always drink a Guinness. And many times in previous life, many more than one Guinness. Today I'll probably have a couple, but we'll see.
Are either of you Irish?
I'm 25%.
25%.
There you go.
My grandma was my mom's mom was 100% Italian. My mom's dad was 100% Irish. And then the two of them met and got married. So I'm 25% Irish from my grandpa.
Lovely. Cool. Lovely. So there's so many things that we should be celebrating today. I am not going to be the party pooper and left out with no wine. I'll keep pace with the Guinness here. But am I right? Finally, something other than whiskey, Brie?
Yeah, I'm glad. I mean, of course, on St. Patrick's Day is the day we don't drink whiskey. But I am glad that with Drinks for the VC, we finally get away. Tess, every single VC has requested whiskey. And we're like, really?
Really?
Yeah, it's a thing.
It is the drink of choice.
Do you
thus
at least
far.
Get different types of whiskey so you can mix it up a bit?
Definitely.
We have. Yeah, the good folks at Berkeland, Brie and her team, are always bringing the fire when it comes to the types of whiskey and the varieties. It's been fantastic. So we're lucky and we're spoiled by Ren and company, who are off camera right now and do the fun producing behind the scenes.
Very, very spoiled. You guys are the most generous. Thank you so much.
So we are super excited to have you on for a number of reasons, but I can't think of a better reason to have you on than the fact that you, Bree, and I both share a love, a real love for Ariana Grande. And I will tell you one last time is, or one more time, now I'm forgetting. I think it's one last time.
Real
is
fan.
My favorite, is my favorite Ariana Grande song. What
is
your
favorite?
Favorite
and you don't even know the title?
I don't look at titles. I just hear the melodies and the voice and I'm, smitten.
But not even on the recent album.
I know it's
but
well,
I'll
it's
believe
not.
You.
It's not. It's not, but that's my thing.
What's your favorite song, Tess?
Well, I am such a fan. I saw her 3 times post the same concert 3 times. So the one right before COVID that one year. She came to SAP and she came to San Francisco. And I just went to see her a lot because I really, really like her. And live, her voice is amazing. Because I like Thank You Next, but because I picked on Vic for it not being a... That one's yours too, Brie?
Of course. It's every girl's anthem.
But I also, I love the new album. I love the new album.
You love the new album. Do you?
Point of view, POV is really speaking to me.
POV is, it's good. It's good. I'm just going to say, I love One Last Time because frankly, I can be in the car driving on 280 or 101 and I'll blast it. If I'm by myself, I will absolutely blast that song. And,
I just looked it up. It is One Last Time. You're right.
It is One Last Time. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Oh, I feel validated, vindicated even. Fantastic. Well, are you familiar with the bit that she does with Jimmy Fallon where she does musical impressions? So she's done Britney Spears doing Mary Had a Little Lamb or Celine Dion doing I Can't Feel My Face. We were going to ask you, because of Smule, to do a rendition of your favorite song. But then we decided because of the high production value that goes into that, not to mention Brie, the fact that we got into trouble last time we had too long of a snippet. Where are we banned? Are we banned somewhere?
Definitely Cuba and North Korea.
Okay. So you can't even listen to our podcast in Cuba or North Korea now because of the podcast episode we did with Brandon Farwell. But so we decided, okay, let's nix that. But we're going to introduce a new bit. And we like to call this, is this space or is this something from my house? And for the listeners and the viewers, you don't necessarily know Tess's forte, she is all things space. I mean, if you look, I mean, Smule is kind of the odd man out in a way. You've got, drone company, satellite company, space exploration company after space exploration company. And so, she knows space. So will you humor us and play this bit with us?
Yes, if it's not me singing, I am signed up.
Okay,
I love to sing, you just don't want to hear it.
Fair. We'll leave that for karaoke when we can all get together in 3D. For now, I'm going to share my screen and you are going to tell me, I'm going to show you an image and you're going to tell me, is it space or something else?
I love games. I'm so excited.
All right. Can everyone see my screen right now?
Yes.
Fantastic. Here we go. First image. Is this of space or something else?
Oh my God. I think it's something else. I think it's like wood. I think it's like a wood chair.
Very good. Congratulations. It's a wooden frame. Brie, you and I have to drink. This is the parameters.
I'm pretty sure that's the Martian surface, probably taken by the Curiosity or the new Perseverance Mars rover.
Damn, fantastic. For extra points, it is Perseverance. And one more time, we drink, Brie.
Drink. But it's sideways, obviously.
It is sideways. I had to do some things in order to try and throw you off your game. Here we go. Another potentially sideways photo. Is this space or something from my house?
I think this is something from your house.
It is.
It's part of the carpet. I don't know what from your house, but
it is from the wool in our rug in the living room.
Must be a beautiful rug.
Yes. Is this next one from space?
Nah, I think that's from your house too.
Incorrect. Tess, yes! Please drink. That is from the microscope that is on the Perseverance.
Oh
wow. So what is it looking at right here? What are we looking at?
I couldn't tell you. You're the one who should really be able to tell us.
Looking for life on Mars.
Yeah. I don't think it's found it, but that seems interesting. Also, I could have been really evil and just blown up a very small, footprint from the Perseverance on Mars. So I feel bad about that.
But no, I'm going to look into this. I mean, Perseverance is the first rover that has a drone on it also.
Yeah. Oh, so, yes, absolutely. It's a for extra points, do you know the name of the drone?
Oh, I should. What is it?
I don't know. I can't remember.
Why are you doing this to us?
I think it starts with an I. Maybe we can have Josh or Ren off camera let us know. I've been pulling for a bit after every podcast where we kind of go back and go through everything that I got wrong, but we haven't gotten there yet.
Ingenuity.
Yes.
Yeah. Ingenuity. Robotic helicopter.
There it is. It starts with an I. I was correct. Perfect. I feel good about that. Well, Tess, that means you have to drink. And Brie, you're fine. You're good. All right. This next one. What do you think, Tess?
So it's metal. It's metal.
It is metal.
Now, I'll talk out my thought process. Lots of things in space need to be radiation hardened because of the sun's just toughness. Now, I also don't think this sort of structure, like the tiny holes, that strength to weight ratio isn't optimal right there. Like everything that flies needs to weigh really little and be really strong.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with your home, but I don't know. It's too zoomed in.
It is my home. It's actually from the main speaker underneath my TV. Oh. Well done.
I was going to get a kitchen appliance, but.
Well done. This is an easy one.
How is it an easy one? It looks like it's from a movie set.
It does look like it's from a movie set, but unless I live on a movie set, I think it's safe to say, along with the fact that I think is the name etched there? It is. I didn't do a very good job of cropping this one.
What does it say? Oh, it says Perseverance.
Yeah, severe. Yeah, yes, that is correct.
This one, where did you get this one from?
This is actually from the Perseverance. It's a selfie that it took, I believe, when it landed.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. When Curiosity took a selfie on the surface of Mars back in 2011, that's why I studied aerospace engineering, was seeing after the 7 minutes of terror where the mission control was sitting at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory holding its breath, seeing if the rover landed successfully or not, and seeing that image of its shadow on the surface was just so exciting and convinced me.
It was thrilling.
I love this photo.
All right. Is this from space, or is this from my house?
Well, I don't think it's from your. You could have a So here's the thing. I don't think there's anything on the planet that can take a photo with that sort of cargo looking thing in the bottom.
Oh, yeah.
So it would be like from a movie set, from a poster you could have. Like that middle capsule gives it away. So it's not okay. From space, but I don't know what it is.
Fair. Okay. All right. Well, you are correct. And I am now one Guinness entirely down. Bree, come on, help me over here.
Where is this from?
So this is from Continuity, I believe. And these are amongst the first shots that were beamed back from there. Again, it's tilted and rotated 90 degrees. And you can't see the horizon. I cropped that out. All right. And this is our final one. This is going to be a tough one.
I think it's the carpet of your house.
Wow. You are not right, but you're not wrong. It is the yoga mat in the back bedroom. And so, yeah, you did win this quite commandingly. Bree.
Okay.
I'm going to just finish this off now.
I feel like you purposefully set this up so that I'd have to drink more tonight, Vic.
I think we just wanted to see unhinged Brie tonight.
Yeah.
That's what we were going for. Let me stop
really
sharing.
That was really fun.
Congratulations. If we had crowd noise that we could kind of beam in, we would do that at this point. So, again, I think this leads us to our first VC unboxing. So if you may, can you open up, I believe it is bag B. So it is the bag labeled B.
So may I first just thank Reynolds and Berkland and you, of course, again, for all of this, but especially the bag is even space themed.
It is.
Like, come on, Reynolds, yeah. Nicely done.
Well done, Ren. Well done. For those of you just listening in, we shipped in Star Wars themed bags.
This one has Darth Vader and a stormtrooper on it.
Yes. Tell us what you're looking at.
Well, you guys didn't even know I just moved into a new home and need a perfect book for my table. It's a second edition of a space atlas, Mapping the Universe and Beyond. This is so thoughtful. Thank you so much.
Yes, absolutely.
This is beautiful.
Wonderful. We're so glad you can have it in your new spot.
Wow. People on the podcast aren't going to be able to. These photos are beautiful. Wow, this is so thoughtful.
So we know that you mentioned you went to Harvard Westlake, where Sally Ride went to school, and she was one of your biggest inspirations. We want to hear about your earliest memories of wanting to be an astronaut.
So Sally Ride, yes, she went to my childhood school in Los Angeles. And when I was going to the school, she came back and spoke. And I was maybe in seventh or eighth grade. So I don't remember a word she said. But I remember the feeling of just being so inspired by seeing this woman standing on the stage who had been to space and wanting to travel in her footsteps. So ever since that day, I started applying to NASA's astronaut program, very much unqualified, but seeing common backgrounds and characteristics of astronauts, I started pursuing on that journey down those steps. So one was studying aerospace engineering. So I got my undergrad and my master's and working at various companies like NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, Bree, you mentioned SpaceX and others like Boeing and Northrop. And now I've pivoted a bit, but I still want to go to space. I still hope to go, probably not as an astronaut, probably as a potential space tourist or a space enthusiast. But I hope it's not only just to low Earth orbit, but it's to the moon and Mars and all the places in this book. Thank you again.
So what were you like when you were in seventh grade before the space obsession? What were you into? I'm curious.
Good dancer.
Oh yeah?
And also, well, this is a secret, but it's no longer going to be a secret. We're buds. It's not going to go anywhere, right? No. I was a childhood actress in Los Angeles.
Oh. So
my mom was in the entertainment industry, and growing up, she encouraged my brother and I to pursue acting. And every day after school, from probably ages 3 through about 15, 16, she'd pick us up and she would drive us all around Los Angeles to all of the studios, and we'd have an audition or two a night. And it was just so much fun. I loved it. I didn't really realize what it was at the time. I was just enjoying it. It was a hobby. It was fun. I would act, I would dance, I would do all these things. But what I think's been really helpful now is twofold. One, public speaking to some extent. Like, I don't get nervous in front of an audience, and I'm able to, even though at that time it was reading other people's lines, sort of similar. But also, secondly, and I think more important, is resilience. Gosh, 99% of the time I would get rejected. But I didn't realize it was rejection. It was going in, meeting new people, and having a fun time with those people. Now, the one or two times or handful of times that audition worked out and I got the job was even more fun. I really enjoyed it, but it taught me a really great resilience, really great lesson.
Is there any early video footage that we can look up? Now I'm extremely curious about this, because we did not uncover any of this in our due diligence for this call.
So when I was little, we didn't have IMDb, right? And we were just like, I have some old VCRs. Let me clarify. My mom's garage has some old VCRs. and there's a few links, but that's like three more glasses.
Three more glasses. Okay. We'll ask you later.
I know you're close to your brother. Is that how you guys became close, or how did that relationship get really tight?
He's such a great brother. I feel so grateful for him. No, he didn't. He actually wasn't into acting as much. He stopped earlier. Like every year, every month, whenever, my mom would ask, like, are you guys sure you still want to do this? And I always was like, yeah, I like it. I still want to do it. Until actually about seventh or eighth grade, when I started discovering I really like math and science, and it was hard missing school. It was hard missing Harvard Westlake. And I just doubled down on math and science, and I didn't go on as many auditions. But it's just Michael and I, so we're so close. He's gonna live with me. He graduates in May from the University of Wisconsin in Madison.
Right.
He's gonna be my future roommate, and he's also a VC. He works at Plug and Play, so he's
fantastic.
Fun to be able to talk to him and work with him. And he's really bright. Everyone loves talking to him. He just gets along with everybody.
So speaking of VC, again, you worked at JPL, Northrop Grumman, and SpaceX, and you're so creative. I mean, doing the background on you, I mean, you've done a lot of things, a lot of creative things, right? From acting now to even writing a comic strip, and we'll get back into that a little bit later. What convinced you that, okay, now I need to make the leap to, you know, being an investor, and what drove you in that direction?
A common question I get asked is like, how did you go from airfoils to term sheets? Yeah. How did this thing happen?
Yeah.
The short version is, I'm still very much an aerospace engineer. Every day I am back of the envelope, does the physics work, and thinking about these industries from a technical standpoint, but rather than at a single company as an investor in the broader ecosystem. The little bit longer version, I after graduating with my aerospace undergrad from Michigan, I went on to work for SpaceX in product mission management. I was helping satellites integrate with the Falcon 9 rocket. And only a handful of months later, I went back to grad school to get a technical master's in aeronautics and astronautics at Stanford. And everything at Stanford is intertwined with entrepreneurship and this thing, VC, this acronym that I really had, I honestly didn't know what it meant at the time. And while getting a technical degree, I really did want to complement it with business and some sort of of non-technical aspect. And I really loved my customer-facing experience at SpaceX. I really liked being able to explain really technical things about the rocket in a non-technical way. So I saw a fellowship sponsored by the VCDFJ for engineering students who are interested in leadership and business and entrepreneurship. And again, no clue what either acronym VC nor DFJ meant. I knew they were investors in SpaceX. So like, I knew, like, yeah, they're smart. Like they know what they're doing, but I didn't know Draper, Fisher, Jurvensden was three man's names who were one of many firms on Sand Hill Road. But through the fellowship, Heidi Roizen, who is a partner at DFJ now named Threshold, and Tina Seelig, professor at Stanford, who teach this program, opened my eyes to this entire industry. And rather than working at a single company as an engineer, I can invest in all deep or frontier tech companies, but as an investor in the ecosystem. And that really resonated with me. And that's what I do now at Bessemer. I've been here about 4 years and I invest in, like you said, rockets and satellites and drones and autonomous vehicles and robotic fish farm and supportless metal 3D printing and all these deeply technical industries that rather than as an engineer, I get to work with in the boardroom.
You talk a little bit about how kind of reaching for the stars in a lot of ways can help spur innovation that changes and enhances society, right? What is one sort of hope of yours or one sort of passion area that you're really interested in that's showing a lot of promise from the innovation side?
Well, I will go off on a rant on all the things I'm passionate and excited to invest in next. But I think what's important to double down in your question that I love is like, why space exploration? Like, how is that helping Earth? Like, why are we shooting for the stars? Why are we going back to the moon? And I really believe we need to be a multi-planet species in order to survive. And that's not to give up on Earth. It's because the technology needed to get to and sustain life on any of these planets will ultimately help life back on Earth and fix the problems we currently face. So an example we all know in during the Apollo mission, when we landed astronauts on the lunar surface, like the photo that you sent of Perseverance on the Martian surface, we wanted to take selfies of the astronauts. That optic technology is helped and is used in our hospitals every day with our MRI and CT scanning technology. Like, did we know that was gonna be a result of space exploration? No, it was unbeknownst, but wonderful benefit and outcome of space exploration. So I think it's so important for all of these potential scenarios that will help Earth. Now, of course, I'm excited about space. Like, I'll always be excited about space. Our two space portfolio companies went public via SPAC 2 Mondays ago. Both Rocket Lab and Spire. So we're thrilled. We were early investors in both of those. So I'm excited for all of the space startups that are gonna follow in Spire and Rocket Lab's footsteps that those two companies paved for the space industry, in addition to drones and AV, like I mentioned. But recently I've been really jazzed about food tech, which we talked about a little bit earlier. So happy to go into again. But the environmental and nutritional aspect of eating a plant-based or other than non-animal way of ending up with that product is, I think, really exciting and gonna be a good thing for our future and world.
You know, there's something beyond just beyond meat there, right? And I'd love to kind of go beyond sort of just, okay, the surface level of that. But where do you see food tech really evolving into, and what are the new spaces that you see it evolving into?
I think it breaks down into two categories. There is plant-based and there's clean cell-based. So there is using plants or unique ingredients in a novel process to exactly mimic the end result, which is like what Impossible Foods did with heme to make what tastes and feels and the process of a burger. The other one is cell lab grown meat, clean meat, which is actually getting like a cell from an animal and growing it in various serum in a various way in a lab. And it is muscle, it is fat, like it is actually an animal, but it's not from an animal. Mm-hmm. Plant-based, as we all know, like we can buy an Impossible Burger at a Safeway today. We can buy Beyond Meat at Ralph's today. We can't do the Cellar Lab one yet. That one is still a further ways out. Mm-hmm. Now, do I think it's like far out? No, I think it's near. I think like putting on my VC hat, I need to look for, and I like to look for things with a shorter return on their investment horizon. So let's say 3 to 5 years. The engineer in me likes to look at like real far, especially when it comes to space. Sure. But those are the two paths I think food technology are moving.
How far ahead in the future are we going to be 3D printing a hamburger on a space shuttle to Mars?
Well, you are so right, one, that like a lot, we need to know how to 3D print food to get there, because we can't like carry enough food to take us. It takes us like, what, 6 months, depending on various orbits that Earth and Mars are. How soon will we be doing that? Let's take a step back. I am so excited by the Artemis program, which is NASA's initiative to land the first woman on the surface of the moon. And I think we will do that within a decade. Like, I am really excited. Kate Rubins actually spoke online at Stanford today, and she is one of the astronauts selected for Artemis. So she's been to the ISS, the International Space Station, a handful of times. So I think that will, going back to the moon, will be a step one. And then hopefully within our lifetime to Mars.
I certainly hope that all of the technology that they're, you know, that's changing our health technology in space down here on Earth, that will be able to hopefully sustain us longer so that we will be around for that kind of technology. So, I mean, because I think there is going to be some life extension that comes out of space exploration.
That is going to exactly be a potential other like MRI and CT scanning technology, life extension technology. What about like pharmaceutical testing? When in low Earth orbit, when you remove gravity, like on Earth, we can change temperature, we can change pressure, and that correlates to density, but we're stuck with 1G. What mm-hmm. if we manufactured or tested stuff in space without gravity, and you can play with gravity as a factor? Like, what new medicine can be invented? What new medicine can be optimized? In addition to, and I think what you were getting at was, humans are hard to sustain in space. Like when we don't have 1G right now, like even though we're sitting and I haven't left my home and I need to get to walk in today, we're like kind of using our muscles a little bit just to sit up. Now, when that's gone, your muscles and bones atrophy. They significantly, astronauts have to work out 2 to 3 hours a day just to maintain and not lose too much muscle or bone mass.
Wow.
So all of that technology to help like humans in space is a hard thing. That's why we launch rovers on the surface of Mars. Perseverance doesn't need to work out 2 or 3 times a day,
right.
2 or 3 hours a day. It works 24/7. So there's going to be really exciting health benefits of space exploration for people here.
So as we look to the stars, I think it's probably good that we transition and that you open up your second bag. It's labeled L.
Okay. Another space themed bag. This is the BB-8. Thank you again.
Love it.
Oh, and there's even some TIE fighters in the corner. Do you see?
Oh, cute.
We've really upped our game on so many different levels. The production value, again, just.
These are so thoughtful. I love gifts. Oh, wait, this is really cool. It's a Skylight Galaxy projector. Wow. So if the room is really dark, it'll show me where all the stars are.
Yes. And it's like the updated version of putting glow-in-the-dark stars on your ceiling.
That's right. That's right.
It's like so the adult version. That's what you meant to say, Bree. But...
You're adulting. You're adulting for sure.
Wow. So, I will take a photo and send this to you all when I set it up literally tonight. I need like a nice night light. Like this will be perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, Vic, you can do your yoga with this. There's a
relaxation. Yes.
Good.
Bree, do you do yoga?
I do. I actually got a new mat for the horrible quarantine. I got like that. That was like, to me, going to bring me joy. And it did. I got this like huge mat and I'm like, yes, because I'm tall. So I need kind of a really long mat. So that brought me joy. How about yourself? Have you been doing a lot of yoga during quarantine?
I haven't done, I need to do yoga. Do you have a studio or instructor you recommend?
No, I just do it in my house.
You do it by yourself.
Oh yeah. I've just been doing like videos. Yeah. That's just really videos. Impressive.
Okay.
Yeah. I got into yoga in college, so I've been doing it for a while.
What about you, Tess? Do you do yoga?
So I'm actually a certified yoga instructor. I did a 200-hour teacher training, 2 years ago now? Pre-COVID. Okay. However many years ago that was.
Yeah.
And unfortunately—
That's serious.
Yes. And I used to before that. I used to do yoga 2 or 3 times a week. I was really into it. I also used to be a SoulCycle ambassador. So like I have my hobbies. But after 200 hours of doing yoga in 4 months every weekend for like 10, I got a little burnt out. So I haven't been going back as much as I should. Because also what I've realized is I started teaching, which was great. But then the time that I normally would do, I would go for practice. I was now teaching and then I couldn't double up the time then to practice also. So, you know, and I just need to take a step back, no teaching, and just go for enjoyment, which maybe I need to just use some of Bree's videos and I'll be back in it.
There's so much actually that I want to touch on there. The first part is you're actually teaching now at Stanford. Is that right? And I think you're teaching a similar course to the one that you took and that got you really excited. Is that right?
So last year, literally, so pre-COVID, I was teaching the exact same program I took, but for professors. So it was called FELP. And it was for professors interested in commercializing their research into potential businesses. And I was co-teaching it with Tina, who, Professor Seelig, was the woman who taught me and has become the dearest mentor and champion and sponsor, but also friend and family member. This quarter, so starting next Wednesday, 2 Wednesdays from now, no, next Wednesday, we're actually, it's a bit different. We're teaching a program for the Knight Hennessy Scholars. So it's also on, it's called Seeing, Seizing, and Scaling Ideas. And it's for the Knight Hennessy Scholars is a program at Stanford that's across all of the disciplines. So you can be an engineer, you can be a business student, you can be a law student. And you have to apply and it's a 2 or 3 year program. And it's a seminar for those students.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And with Tina again, so.
And with Tina again. That's great. So the other piece that your comment brought up for me that I've been kind of thinking about a lot is this sort of correlation or kind of connection between spirituality and science. And I'm interested, as someone who did 200 hours learning how to become a yogi, a formal instructor, and someone who's so rooted in aeronomics and astronomics, with her MS from Stanford, how do you personally marry the two?
I think there's a lot of overlap. So from a very technical standpoint, my favorite part of the yoga teacher training was actually the anatomy and why yoga poses are the way that they are. And my instructor was very much about alignment. So you'll see a lot of yoga classes or photos where it's not good for your body to be doing those things. Mm-hmm. And she was very adamant about the way that your hips were supposed to be in Warrior One versus Warrior Two, and not overexerting your spine or back or knee or et cetera. So that sort of like technical aspect, I was my jam. Because I also like, I would always get little injuries here and there. But the second I learned more about why my body and bones work in that way, I can moderate it for biking or running or whatever other exercise I'm doing as well. I think the biggest takeaway from the yoga teacher training that's like correlates now, not exactly to Aeroastro, but to VC, is the topic of equanimity, which was a huge topic of yoga. that has been really helpful when, let's say, something goes really, really well or really, really bad at a portfolio company, like staying equanimous and just, if a CEO calls you and is really happy or really sad, it's like, I'm here for you. I hear you. And just sitting in it, waiting till he or she is ready, and then walking or asking questions or thinking through it. So that's been like that grounding element was really interesting.
Is there, so there's something about it, right? Everyone that we've interviewed with and had, you know, these episodes with has said, there's a curiosity about them, right? And I think just naturally VCs are curious people. You've jumped out of planes. You've applied to the Artemis program. Is there anything that you're not curious about?
I'm not curious about making an investment that challenges my moral compass. There's like a fine line. And I think ethics and entrepreneurship is something that's not spoken about enough that really should be. And that's not, if it challenges my moral compass or I don't believe in or I don't agree with, like I won't make that investment or I won't partner with that idea. Which I went deep real quick. So maybe I'll jump back to physical risk. I'm all for, like, skydiving was so much fun. I want to go in the Vomit Comet, which is technically called the Weightless Wonder, which is a plane that does these parabolic trajectories. It's actually for testing in zero G, because when you're going down, there's no gravity. And then it comes back up. And when you go up, there's two G's and you go back and forth. And there's a company that you like pay and it's called zero G and you can like go take a flight. So that's going to be some monumental like birthday or celebration gift. I don't know. I went with my best grad school friend and I who celebrate the same birthday. So her and I always do some pretty fun adventurous thing every year. And that was the one that year.
So wait, when's your birthday and what's your sign?
May 11th, and I'm a Taurus. What does that mean? What are you? When's your birthday and what's your sign?
Well, what's yours, Vic?
I'm an Aquarius. Well, actually, I'm a Capricorn Aquarius cusp, but I feel like I'm firmly an Aquarius. I was born January 21st. I test piqued my interest because my wife is born May 4th. And wondering if there's similarities in personality that way.
How would you, is she like or not like her sign? How would you describe?
She's very stubborn, very much a Taurus. And so I will just leave it at that before she listens to this podcast and has words for me later.
What about you, Brie?
I'm a Leo. I was born August 1st. I actually love how astrology and astronomy have influenced mythology. And there's always like, you know, there's kind of this bridge between our astrological signs and like how the, I guess, ancient man or, you know, whatever was really so fascinated with space that they like create a whole kind of spirituality around it, right? And so I would love to hear your take on astrology and also the age of Aquarius, if you think that's a thing.
Ooh, you have to explain to me what the age of Aquarius means, which is probably telling you what my answer to this.
No one knows what it means. That's the thing. No one knows what the age of Aquarius means. They just know that we're entering from Pisces into Aquarius. And do you know the constellation Aquarius? What is it? Tell us about that. I don't know.
Stars are not, my mom used to say Mercury was in retrograde, which Brie, you may be having one of those dates right now.
I'm going to that.
Mercury may be in retrograde for you right now. I'm sorry to hear about this week of yours. But you know what? I have a handy dandy projector now to learn in $5.
I think she should open her next gift because yeah, I feel she like absolutely. She should open sure. the next gift.
It's something about
come together.
Is it about okay?
We're gonna bring it all together.
Wait, which one is it? The next one? It should be
Bag Y.
Wait, I want to know about this. Why do we not know about this
Age of Aquarius.
Age of Aquarius.
Oh, yeah, because, like, I guess, you know, we just, I mean, we've lost all of the, you know, probably in papyrus form, what ancient man thought it was. We just know we're entering into it, and everyone's like, what is it? We don't know. I'm like, maybe an astronomer knows, because astrologists don't. But supposedly Aquarius was the water bearer for Zeus, and he was a bit androgynous. So my interpretation is that we're probably moving into an age of individualism and less about gender and more about androgyny and being who you are versus trying to conform. I think that that's what it might mean. And I really feel like we're moving into that. So,
yeah.
Wow. Actually, you guys know me so well. And now, Brie, we have no excuse not to do virtual.
I know.
With your person guided as well. Oh, this is so nice. It's a yoga mat towel.
So I figured you had all the yoga accessories because I knew you were a certified instructor because you had just certified when I met you. So I was like, what wouldn't she have? And I was like, towels are always useful, always. So I got you more.
I don't have one, which is crazy.
Really?
Which is crazy because, like, hot yoga, I like definitely sweat. So this is so helpful. And it actually it matches my yoga mat perfectly. Did you know that?
No.
We do not stop to that level, Tess, but we're getting there. We're getting there. By the way, I think
I am very impressed.
It's incredibly insightful, Brie. I do think that, you know, as the world, we've already become sort of a melting pot of cultures and races, religions, etc. And I think it's only a matter of time before there's a lot of fluidity around you know, gender and you know, everything from where you work to how you live, right? And you know, that having been said, I want to go back to what Tess said earlier, and I know you wanted to keep it light, but we do like to cover all sorts of topics. You know, we still have to talk about women in venture capital because there are still so few of you, right? And, you know, in order to get to that fluidity where we're not talking about it like it's different or whatever. And we asked Sarah the same question in a previous episode from Wave Capital. What kind of, you're a role model. And I think, what do you want your mark to be? You know, as you become partner of a very well-known venture fund like Bessemer, what do you want your legacy to look like at Bessemer?
So I first want to just strongly express gratitude and thanks to, one, the female VCs that trailblazed and paved the path to allow me to follow in their footsteps. And that is, for me, Heidi Roizen, who I mentioned earlier as one of the professors of the Threshold and DFJ program that I was a part of, who has also become a dear mentor and champion and sponsor and dear friend. I'm just so grateful for women like her and Anne Wimblon and all of these amazing legends who have allowed this possibility to come to fruition. It's also in the aerospace industry. I look up to women like Gwen Shotwell, who's the president and CEO of SpaceX. Yeah. And she walks down the rocket aisle with her red Louis Vuitton sole heels and just commands authority in a feminine, very, very inspiring way. Now, as you asked this question, I am an investor. I look at data. And just yesterday, Axios, May 16th, so yeah, yesterday, wrote another article on these data. In 2016, 5.7% of decision makers were women. In 2017, it turned to 7%. In 2018, 8.9%. 2019, 9.7%. In 2020, 12.4%.
Oh.
Right now, it's 14.2%.
Wow.
So, taking that data, what do I see from that? I see it's moving. I see there's progress being made. Now, is that number 50? No. How long is it going to take to get to 50? A while. and it needs to move faster than that. And I'm really grateful for the partners at Bessemer that have sponsored and championed me and Mary D'Onofrio, who is also recently partner at Bessemer. She's also a dear friend. She joined 3 years ago and it was the best thing to happen to the firm. And it's been so great getting to know her and work with her and now be her partner at the firm. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody realizes how large of a problem this is and is working on a solution. And it's not, and I don't also, by the way, want to just specify gender. That is one of many qualities and attributes, by the way, above the iceberg. There are so many below the iceberg that you don't see. Yeah. Like I can see your gender, I can see your skin color, I can see certain things, but I can't, there are so many things under the iceberg that contribute to just as important of a diverse perspective. And I really think and want to make sure that that's not only reflected around the Bessemer partnership table, but around portfolio company CEOs and portfolio companies. I'm mm-hmm. a big advocate in the boardroom for D&I, and I sit on comp committees to make sure that everybody within the company, whether you're male or female or whichever race, are paid the exact same depending on your level and are getting the same amount of equity. Mm-hmm. So that's a little thing that I can do in all my companies, in addition to mentoring and advocating and speaking at these events and organizations and being a member of All Raise, which I'm very grateful for. Mm-hmm. And just being hopefully that role model for other folk. Like if I had never seen Sally Ride when I was 12, 13, I probably never would have I never would have thought that would have been for me to be able to do. I'm so excited about the next generation of little girls. I get to look up and see Heidi and Mary and just be so inspired. Like they look like me, I can do that too.
I love that. Heidi has been a trailblazer and venture. And I also want to mention Mary is super smart. She invented a metric for SaaS. I think it was the cash conversion score. What an amazing woman. And she's young like you. It just makes me so excited to see such smart women in venture.
She is brilliant. She is so smart. And yes, she invented this new SaaS metric. And she delivered our State of the Cloud last week with Byron and Elliot.
Incredible.
Please check it out. It's I think probably Google State of the Cloud and it comes up. So more little nuggets and metrics for you to dig into if that's your thing.
I love it. So speaking of metrics and teaching, you have been a writer for a comic that you can find on Instagram. Please correct me if I'm wrong. Is it Ada?
Ada_Ride.
Ada. Okay, perfect.
Which is Ada Lovelace and Sally Ride combined.
Right. I was going to say that has to be after Sally uh-huh. Ride. I didn't put together Ada Lovelace until you said it, but yeah. Okay. That's awesome. Ada Ride. Love it.
Yep. Follow at Ada_Ride. And I have an amazing artist, Josh. He's makes these brilliant comics. So all I do is like give him some words and he makes it beautiful and follow us.
It is a fantastic comic. And I'm following you now. I think it's super informative and it's just like a wealth of knowledge. And I'm going to point my nieces and nephews to it to just see it and consume the content. They're on Instagram anyway more than I am, but I think they'll really get a kick out of it.
Please do. It's meant to be for like children. It's supposed to be like, I don't know, ages 8 to 13, maybe 13 is even too old, because it's like it's you'll learn like interesting facts, but in a like jokey, silly kind of way. I kind of look at it as like if Dora the Explorer went to space.
If you ever want to pitch it to Nickelodeon, my cousin works there, by the way. Mm-hmm. On the animation side. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Well, yeah, I think you should eventually pitch it. I think kids need to see Ada Ride because it's cute. Yes. It's a female astronaut and a robot. For those of you who are curious, it's really adorable.
Well, please, if your cousin's interested, like they can have the idea. I just wanted to go into the world, like to have a little, like a girl space explorer, I think would be really exciting. So I need to like think more about what to do with this.
It's cute.
Thank you.
It did inspire us for our next game. Did you want to get into that, Vic?
Yes, I do. We have another game. This one isn't visual, but we like to call it space, fact, or fiction. And you are, again, there's a running theme here. You are a space buff. And we love to grill our guests any chance we can. So I am going to give you a statement. And Bree and I also, Bree, make sure that you have a full wine glass because I feel like this could go terribly wrong for
us.
Yeah,
you're going to win this. I already know this test.
Oh, boy.
Those pictures were tough. So I'm just going to focus.
Okay, here we go. So I'm going to give you a statement and you are going to tell me if it is true or not. We're going to try and dispel a lot of things. So I might say a statement like, you can hear an explosion in space. And
false.
You would
it's
say
a vacuum. You can't hear anything.
Exactly. You can't hear anything. It's not like Expanse on Amazon.
Drink, Bree. Just kidding.
Oh, again. And I even knew the answer to that. Damn it. I've seen what's that Sandra Bullock movie.
Can Bree play too, or does she know the answers?
Bree does not know the answers for many of these.
I guess I could play, but you know what? I would let it would be so embarrassing.
You know what? We'll all three of us or both of you will play, and I'll read out the statement. Here we go. Garfield is the mascot for NASA safety. True or false?
Can I ask a clarification question?
Depending on the question, go ahead.
Is Garfield like the cat? The comic cat?
Garfield the cat. Yes, that's correct.
So I know that they eat peanuts during the landing, the rover landing, as like superstition. So the thing is Garfield the mascot for NASA?
Safety. NASA safety. I'm going to say I have no idea on this one.
Bree, you're just drinking now.
I'm just going to drink. That's all I have to
I'm gonna
to
say no. I don't think so. I don't know. It's kind of random, but
I'm sure it's not.
Correct. It is false. Garfield is not the mascot for NASA safety. I will tell you, however, you were on the right track. Peanuts is something that they eat, and so Snoopy is the mascot for NASA safety. Well done.
Charles Schultz is from Sonoma County, I believe. There is a Peanuts Museum. Up north. We should all go.
We should. Wine tasting and then the Peanuts Museum, please.
Yes. Santa
Fantastic.
Rosa.
Fantastic.
Schultz Airport. Why is Snoopy the safety mascot? Does anyone know this? That seems random.
I very superficial knowledge on my part. I apologize.
Again, Vic has no answers other than
I'm an Aquarius. Don't ask me about the age of Aquarius. I can't tell you.
Didn't you say VCs were curious earlier tonight?
Yeah, I'm really curious about a lot of things. And
he's curious about Tess. He's curious about you.
Yeah, I was curious about you. And that's why we dug into that. I think you're going to know the answer to this. I'm almost 100% sure. But there is a light and dark side of the moon.
Even I know that.
Is that a true or false statement? That there is a light and dark side of the moon.
The moon rotates on its own axis with the same speed in which it rotates around the Earth. There's also a geostationary satellite orbit where satellites are whizzing around the Earth, but they're whizzing around the Earth at the same speed in which the Earth rotates. So it kind of looks like they're over the same point forever.
We got 10 minutes.
This is the lightning round. Here we go. More energy from the sun hits Earth every hour than the planet uses in a year.
I'm going with Bree. I agree. Yes, true.
It is true. Congratulations.
I heard that from someone who was like, we waste all the solar energy. Did you know? And I was like, that's a rant. Thank you. Thank you for that rant. Saved me. I could drink. Wait, I'm going to drink anyway.
Drink anyway. Okay, here we go. Footprints from the Apollo space mission to the moon are no longer there.
Oh, true. They're no longer there. Yes. Oh, they're still there because there's no wind?
Correct. It is false. They will be there for 100 million years due to the fact that there's no wind.
Oh, Chess, drink up. I'll drink too. I didn't know.
We're going to thank Josh for that one. I was really afraid that there was going to be no drinking on Tess's part this whole time. But I had to get really archaic, and I feel like I've manipulated these facts. Okay, here we go. The Milky Way gets its name from the Greek goddess of marriage who spread her milk across the night sky.
That sounds right, but... Greek goddess.
The Greek goddess is Hera.
Oh, so Zeus's wife, the Milky Way. She spread her milk across the sky. I don't know. Tess, what do you think? That sounds good.
I wasn't really good at Greek mythology in fourth grade.
Oh, I was the one that brought it up earlier, so you would think I would know. Hera spreading her milk. And I brought up Aquarius, who was Zeus's freaking water bearer.
And how you sure.
I'm going to say yes. It did get its name from that. What do you think, Tess?
Again, Team Bree. We're a team.
We are a team.
It is true. Congratulations.
Yes! Go wow. Bree.
All right, here we go. One day on Venus is longer than 1 year on Earth.
I don't think that's right, but I could be wrong on this one. But that doesn't seem right to me based on my knowledge of mass and rotation.
The calculation you have to do is like one day on Venus. I don't know how slow or fast Venus spins. So like Venus spinning with Earth going totally around the sun. But I'll admit, like, I don't know the speed in which Venus spins.
I know Venus is hot, though. It's like 700 and something degrees.
It's like a terrible, yes, it's a very harsh environment.
Tell.
I don't know how fast or slow Venus spins, but we understand the question.
We do. It is true
that
one day on Venus is longer than 1 year on Earth.
It spins really slowly.
It spins really slowly.
Did you hear, Tess, that they found life on Venus in Venus's atmosphere?
They sent a laser and it diffracted. And they're like, oh, there must be organisms in the atmosphere.
See, she knew how it worked. I just knew that it existed, but she knew what happened. That's so cool.
Oh my gosh, this is the funniest thing.
This is the bonus round.
Oh yeah, where's my metal cap?
Which we don't have a true or false answer for. It's not true or false.
I want one.
She's like, where's my metal cap?
I know. We didn't make you a tinfoil cap. Is there life, intelligent life, out there?
I'd like to think there might be, but I don't think there is.
There are a lot of galaxies out there. I feel like there is. I feel like there is intelligent life out there. As intelligent, more intelligent, I don't know, you know, how they communicate.
I hope. I hope they're more intelligent than us, Vic.
I do too. I do too. By my reading, we lost that round. Squarely. So with that.
That was a tough round.
So with that, I'm gonna have a sip while you open up the final bag labeled Woo-hoo! V for Victor.
May I just thank you guys again for how thoughtful all of this is, and also just how much I've loved this conversation. It's been so fun.
We've loved spending the time with you. Hopefully you'll come back and visit us again.
Hopefully next time it'll be in 3D.
Yes, 3D.
Hopefully next time I'll just be able to give you guys a hug. Like, that's so missed right now. Oh my gosh. United Federation of Planets Starfleet Command.
You know, your application might be pending with Artemis, but you're a member of the Space Force in our minds.
I've got a vest.
Do you have a vest yet? We didn't know if you had a vest. We feel like this is christening you.
Wait, this is no, I don't. But now I have a vest that I'm never gonna take off. Yes!
That is amazing.
So, I'm going to put this out here. I haven't said this on any of our previous podcasts, but I want to, and I'm going to say it on this podcast with you, Tess, just because of what you said. We want to do an in-person fashion show with you in your vest called Invest. And it will have all of our other podcast guests also showing off their vests.
I love it.
Brandon has to wear the one you got him, which seems like a very funny shirt.
Yes.
Of course.
Well,
of course.
He can wear his, we did get him the Stanford crew vest. And I think the goal is that we'll all, you know, when the pandemic is behind us to the extent that it can be, and we can all kind of coalesce together in one area, we should have a party where everyone wears their vests and shows them off, at least. And to Bree's point, if there's a professional photographer in the room that, you know, has a nice backlit green wall, we should have a photo shoot. Makes sense. There's so much more that we want to get into. So you do have to come back, and we must get into that. Everything from STEM to, just the plethora of conversations you've had with people that didn't believe that you worked at SpaceX. There's a lot that we just didn't get to tonight. But we're so grateful that you came by. We're so thrilled for you that you're a partner at Bessemer, and you're doing fantastic things in the world and investing in fantastic companies. And they're clearly just better for having you on their board as an observer and just as an ideator and helping them build. So thank you for coming. As is typical on our episodes of Drinks with a VC, we'd like the investor to toast us out for the evening. And this is your time. This is your 20 to 30 seconds of fame.
Well, I first want to note that the two of you are still wearing tin foil on your heads. It's a very, very good look. But I want to make the toast to the two of you. Thank you so much for inviting me here today. Bree, it was so lovely meeting you years ago on that boat. And we have now watched football games together and all the other fun pre-COVID activities that I cannot wait for post-COVID. And Vic, it's so nice meeting new friends. So I cannot wait for the many future outings. And a huge shout out again to Reynolds for, he's driven to my home in Pebble Beach and he's now dropped off a bunch of stuff in Palo Alto. So thank you so much for all of you for having me here. It's been so fun chatting. Cheers.
Cheers.